Track one.
Welcome to the East Shropshire Talking Newspaper. And now, over to your presenter.
Hello, and welcome to edition number 1679, which is being recorded at the Wrekin Housing Group in Telford on the 7th of October, 2025. I'm Jo Allam, here with sound engineer John Wardle, to bring you our weekly roundup. We thank the Midland News Association for allowing us to access their papers in digital form. We use the Shropshire Star, Telford and Bridge North journals, and Newport and Market Drayton advertisers. Any other publications are mentioned by name as and when we use them. This week, our news editors are Al McLean and Morgan Spice, so over to them for our first news segment.
Residents in two areas of Telford can request an election to replace Councillor Ernie Dabbs, who has died. Councillor Dabbs held seats for Oakengates Town Council's Wanbridge ward and also for the St George's West ward of St George's and Priorslee Parish Council at the time of his death on August the 17th. He was aged 94 and served faithfully, said a spokesperson for the councils. Both councils lodged public notices, which gave 14 days for 10 electors to request the returning officer to hold an election. If a request to hold the election was not received during the permitted time, the council was then able to co-opt to fill the vacancy. Councillor Dabbs was described by Oakengates Town Council as a proud Oakengates man, whose lifelong commitment to our town was truly inspiring. He was an active member of his church, a passionate advocate for local history, and a founder member of the Friends of Hartsill Park Group. The town council said he worked for GKN Sankey's, where he served as a foreman in the tool room until his retirement. Ernie was well-liked and respected by all who knew him. "We remember him fondly as a true community man," a statement read. St George's and Priorslee Parish Council recorded great sadness, the death of James Ernest Ernie Dabbs at the age of 94. The parish council said Ernie first became a parish councillor in April 2003, serving his community with dedication. After a short break from duties in 2015, he was re-elected in May 2019 and continued to serve faithfully until his passing. He will be remembered as a much-loved and respected member of the community.
Work is now underway on a state-of-the-art new £1.9 million library being developed at Telford College. The college is currently transforming the Learning Resource Centre at its Wellington campus, creating a new two-storey library, which chiefs at the college say is expected to open its doors to students in spring 2026. Spanning 700 square metres, the state-of-the-art facility will offer more than 150 study seats, two bookable study rooms, dedicated teaching space, and areas for workshops and collaborative learning. Students will also benefit from access to a wide range of e-books, online journals, and loanable laptops that can be stored in smart lockers. Funded through the government's Capital Transformation Fund, the project is being delivered in partnership with Johnson Design Partnership, a renowned Bridge North-based architectural practice that is known for innovative and student-focused designs. This project will create a vibrant modern library designed to enhance student engagement, independent learning, digital fluency and inclusivity, said Caroline Bastow, Telford College's Vice Principal for Support and Performance. And she added, "The new library will serve as a hub of academic support, offering flexible study zones, group collaboration areas, social learning spaces, and also integrated digital resources. It is part of a wider redevelopment plan for the whole of the Wellington campus to modernise learning environments, promote digital integration, and ensure a quality of access for all learners." She said the redesign has placed a strong focus on student well-being, with an emphasis on natural light and smart acoustic design. Becky Johnson, architect at Johnson Design Partnership, added, "It's always fun to work with educational clients to transform existing buildings into exciting new spaces that inspire students. At the heart of our design is the introduction of lots of natural light to create a brighter learning environment, whilst the two-tier ceiling system will deliver the best possible acoustics. We have a lot of experience delivering schemes in live working environments, and this will be crucial as the build will take place while students are continuing their learning on campus.
Plans to turn a semi-detached house in Donington into a 10-bed house of multiple occupancy, or HMO, have been withdrawn after concerns were raised by the local authority. The proposal, lodged by Market Drayton-based EMS Design Limited on behalf of the applicant Aikash Desai, argued the development was sustainable and policy compliant and would ensure preservation of the building's heritage. But the plans were met with backlash from neighbours, several of whom raised several concerns over the scale of the development and the lack of parking. A comment from the applicant attempted to reassure objectors, stating that the property would be rented primarily to students and working professionals, that there were good public transport links, and that no parking would be provided as part of the contract. Mr. Desai added, "We will be letting to vetted tenants only, students and professionals, with strict tenancy agreements in place to discourage antisocial behaviour. Should any issues arrive, we will deal with them swiftly and responsibly to ensure a safe and respectful environment for all. As part of the renovation, we will install soundproofing measures such as noise-reducing windows and doors. In addition, tenancy agreements will include clear clauses about respecting neighbours, keeping noise to a minimum, and maintaining peace in the community." But the plans also raised an objection from the local highway authority, which said the application did not meet the required number of parking spaces necessary for approval. Following the objections, the application was withdrawn. An email from the agent to planning officers stated that there was a lot of stuff to do, and withdrawing would give them time to work through this.
Two Shropshire schools, Lamledge in Shifnal and Smallbrook in Harmer Hill, have installed rooftop solar panels this summer as part of a pilot scheme that could save nearly £2 million across four schools over 25 years. The pilot, delivered with consultancy partner Two Blues Solar, is designed to reduce carbon emissions and stabilise long-term energy costs for Outcomes First Group, which runs nearly 100 schools nationwide. At Lamledge, the system is expected to meet up to 28% of the school's annual energy demand. Battery storage has also been added, allowing power generated outside teaching hours to be used later and cutting reliance on the grid. Smallbrook School is expected to gain up to 23% of its energy from solar. In total, the four pilot sites, two in Shropshire, one in Worcestershire, and one in Norfolk, have a combined capacity of 298 kilowatt peak and are forecast to generate 273,000 kilowatt hours each year. Two Blues Solar typically funds and delivers solar projects itself. In this case, Outcomes First Group opted to self-fund and appointed the company to manage feasibility, contractor procurement, and project delivery across the sites.
Up to 300 homes could be built near Much Wenlock as a housing developer targets land near the Shropshire town. Bonningale Developments has targeted land off Bridge North Road in Much Wenlock for the scheme, which it says will include new housing, public open space, flood alleviation infrastructure and landscaping. An in-person community exhibition was held and an online consultation is also running until October the 17th. Following feedback, an outline planning application will be submitted. The site comprises two parcels of land either side of the Bridge North Road to the south of Wenlock. The northern parcel lies adjacent to Much Wenlock Infant School and the residential areas of Hunters Gate and Forrester Avenue, while the southern parcel is between Bridge North Road and Culloden Lane. Aligned with the now withdrawn draft local plan, which has allocated part of the site for development, we would also incorporate measures to address existing flood concerns in the Hunters Gate area, said a spokesman for Bonningale Developments. The homes would also include affordable properties, said the developer.
The Telford Secondary School has officially opened its new £9.2 million science centre in truly explosive style. Pupils from seven Telford primary schools were invited to join Urquhart Wood Academy's own students and staff to try out a range of colourful experiments in the new building before the ribbon was officially cut by the town's mayor. The launch event included exploding methane and monster bombs, plus flaming hydrogen balloons and various other experiments designed to serve up a mix of education, enrichment and entertainment. The three-story science building at the Wellington School has 10 classrooms kitted out with the latest laboratory equipment, with a total capacity for 300 students. It forms part of an £11 million programme of improvements carried out around Urquhart Wood campus over the past year. Principal Nick Murphy commented, "This is not just the unveiling of bricks, mortar and laboratories. This is the beginning of a new chapter in our school's journey, filled with curiosity, discovery and innovation. Science has always been about asking questions. With these new facilities, our students will have the space, tools and inspiration to seek out the answers for themselves."
Ecologists have raised concern about the loss of a native hedgerow that a water company wants to remove to create a temporary access. There is already a gate near the section of site where Severn Trent Water wants to get to the Rodway Water Treatment Works in Charrington near Newport, but it's used by a local farmer to move livestock, council planners have been told. "We object at this stage, as the biodiversity net gain information is not sufficient," an ecologist has told planning colleagues at Telford and Reaking Council. Severn Trent Water has applied to the council to create a temporary access point of Crudgington Moors Road for its Rodway Water Treatment Works in Charrington. The access is needed until December 2028 to allow large construction vehicles to deliver materials for essential upgrades. The proposal involves removing a 19-metre section of native hedgerow in good condition, which will require 2 weeks of roadworks. While the applicant plans to fully reinstate the hedgerow, the ecologist has raised an objection stating that the biodiversity plan information is insufficient. The ecologist said the hedgerow has been accounted for, but not the impact on the grass verge. Planning agents for Severn Trent Water state that the loss of biodiversity will be compensated for off-site. The Tiverton and Charrington Parish Council has chosen not to comment on the application, which is now under consideration.
A Shropshire MP has voiced strong opposition to government plans to introduce mandatory digital ID cards, vowing to defend civil liberties against government overreach. Helen Morgan, MP for North Shropshire, said she cannot support the rollout of a system where people are forced to turn over their private data. Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer said digital ID cards will help make the country's borders more secure. While they won't be required for everyday use, they will be mandatory for anyone wishing to work in the UK. The government said the scheme will be rolled out by the end of this parliament, meaning it would be in place before the next general election, which must take place by August 15, 2029. Helen Morgan MP has urged residents to sign a petition organised by her political party, the Liberal Democrats, that warns the policy could create barriers for older people, those with disabilities, and others at risk of digital exclusion. She said, "Liberal Democrats have always stood up to defend civil liberties against government overreach. We will fight tooth and nail to oppose these plans too." The petition can be found online via Ms Morgan's and the Lib Dems' websites.
Villagers near Telford have been urged to use their local bus or lose it. Councillor Nick Iles, who chairs Tiverton and Charrington Parish Council and is a regular on the 103 service into Wellington, admits being concerned when he sees buses with few or no passengers. The Travel Telford route, which links Newport and Wellington, recently received a major boost from Telford and Reaking Council, which secured a Saturday service and more regular buses. A meeting of Tiverton and Charrington Parish Council heard that the borough has responded quickly to passenger concerns. Councillor Iles is hopeful that a 5 p.m. service can be added to the route for youngsters who attend after-school events in Newport. "It's a lifeline for people," said Councillor Iles at the meeting last week, where he launched a passionate plea for more passengers to board the bus. "But it's not going to survive on two or three people per journey," he said. He added that the service is good for people going into Newport or taking a scenic trip to Wellington. "You see, parts of Telford and Reaking you never knew existed," he added. The council is one of the few in the country directly operating buses.
Track 2. There are many ways you can listen to our ESTN recordings. You can hear us by listening to the weekly memory sticks, which we send out in our pouches, or by visiting our website, www.eastshropshiretn.co.uk. Apple service users can listen via Apple's podcasts, iTunes, and Apple's home smart speaker. And you can still listen in over the phone by calling 01952 935 936 from any landline or mobile. These calls are chargeable but won't cost any more per minute than a standard call. I have a quick schedule of upcoming events held by the Sight Loss Organisation Group. They meet in Oswestry on the first Wednesday of the month from 10:30 to 12:30 at Oswestry Library on Arthur Street, with the next session being on the 5th of November and featuring a Willow workshop with Kathy Preston. In Ludlow Library, the meetings are the third Monday of the month, again from 10:30 to 12:30, with Stories of Ludlow Castle on the 20th of October and Crafting with Recycled Materials on the 17th of November. If you're closer to Shrewsbury, they meet on the fourth Monday of the month from 2 to 4 p.m. with a drumming workshop on 27th of October, and on the 24th of November, Emma Chaplin, Eye Care Liaison Officer, is there to provide information, emotional support and advice if you have a condition which affects your sight. Meetings are in the lecture room of the United Reformed Church by the English Bridge. There is no need to book for any of these events. Simply go along on the day and you are welcome to take a friend or companion. The Sight Loss Group also reported on the smart glasses that are being created by Envision. They are launching their Ally Solos glasses in October, designed with the needs of people living with sight loss in mind. The glasses work hands-free and screen-free, using voice interaction to make everyday tasks easier. Wearers can ask the glasses to read menus, books and documents aloud, describe surroundings, recognise people or objects, and even provide reminders of calendar updates. Most importantly, people with sight loss were directly involved in shaping the design, helping to make the glasses intuitive and practical for everyday life. It is hoped they will attend county meetings in 2026 to give everyone the chance to try out the glasses, ask questions, and see how they could make a difference. I'll keep you updated. You might remember me mentioning the Be My Eyes app, which brings visually impaired people together with volunteers to help with small tasks over a smartphone. They have just announced a new pilot with BT and EE, bringing Be My Eyes on-demand visual support to blind and low-vision customers in the UK. Through this pilot, customers can now connect directly with BT and EE via the Be My Eyes app for real-time, accessible assistance across products and services. If this could be useful for you, to get started, download the Be My Eyes app, go to Service Directory, then Telecommunications, and select BTEE. This will connect you live with an agent. This first edition of the month is where we get the chance to welcome new listeners and thank those who give so generously so that we can continue to bring our broadcasts to you. Thank you for donations received from Mrs. Leslie Laurie, daughter of Eunice Oakley, a volunteer, Mr. K. Edwards from Edgemond, Mr. B. Banks, Mrs. E. Hope and Mrs. J. Brighton from Wellington, Mr. A. Elwell from Church Eaton, Mrs. Y. Smith from Sutton Hill, and Mr. M. Edwards from Pristine. And welcome to new listeners, Mrs. Celia Bold of Ketley Bank, Mr. John Garbutt of Admiston, hello there neighbour, Mr. John Isherwood of Shifnal, and Mr. Keith Hancocks of Wellington. I hope you enjoy the show. Back to the newsroom now with Morgan and Al.
Hundreds of people turned out for a popular festival of ginger and spice and all things nice in Market Drayton a few weekends ago. The much-loved Ginger and Spice Festival returned on the Saturday. The annual event is aimed at celebrating the town's rich culinary heritage and historic connection to gingerbread. There was a packed lineup of new and returning attractions, including live music, street food, cultural experiences and family fun. The town's well-known reputation as the home of gingerbread is believed to stem from its historical connections to Clive of India, who played a key role in establishing the spice trade route from India to Britain by sea. By 1793, gingerbread production was well established in Market Drayton. Organiser Julia Roberts told the Shropshire Star, "It's been a very successful event again this year. I think we've had a record attendance, although it's hard to tell without the final figure for ticket sales. There's been lots going on, and it's going really well," she added, mentioning the Green Men Morris dancers and dancers from the Chinese community among the attractions. She also said the wide variety of stalls went down well with visitors. "We're really grateful for the Market Drayton Town Council's support, Shropshire Council and our sponsors." A highlight of this year's festival was the return of Rajasthan Heritage Brass Band, who were back by popular demand after thousands of pounds were raised to fund their appearance at the not-for-profit event. Now in its ninth year, the festival drew thousands of visitors to the North Shropshire town. Other highlights on the bill included a floating market on the canal, a high-energy evening performance by Spice Girls tribute band act Wannabe.
Weather warnings and flood alerts will play an important part in a Shropshire NHS Trust's winter plan. The Shropshire Community Health NHS Trust, or Shropcom, will be using a hotspot map to understand areas of vulnerability and challenged access in times of snow or flooding. A meeting of Shropcom's board was told that the Trust has developed and tested a support desk approach in extreme weather, which reviews weather and travel data. Chiefs will be using real-time monitoring of community hospital admissions, staff availability, community visits, and bed status to aid its proactive decision-making and rapid mobilisation of resources. Also included will be enhanced monitoring of the Met Office Hazard Manager System, Environment Agency flood alerts and river flood alerts, use of the NHS England Adverse Weather Toolkit, and collaboration with council colleagues to produce a rapid catchment flood action card to proactively support rural community service delivery. The Trust runs a range of community-based health services for adults and children in Shropshire, Telford and Wrekin, and some services to people in surrounding areas including the Black Country and Powys. It employs around 1,700 people, including district nurses, staff nurses and admin staff, with the majority of care in people's homes and across 75 sites, including four community hospitals at Bridge North, Whitchurch, Ludlow and Bishop's Castle. Leaders say they will use a robust hotspot map to understand areas of vulnerability and challenged access in times of snow or flooding. This is used to support forward planning and to align with fire and rescue and other emergency services if needed, to gain vital access and maintain those most at risk in the communities during extreme weather conditions. A report to the board said, "Real-time notifications of adverse weather, such as snow, flooding or high winds, are now disseminated directly to operational teams and leadership via secure channels and huddles arranged if required. These alerts are integrated into daily briefings and response protocols, enabling rapid evaluation of potential impacts and timely escalation when thresholds are met. As soon as a Met Office alert is issued, business continuity plans as required are initiated in readiness checks, review vulnerable areas highlighted in the hotspot map, and coordinate with community partners to ensure that critical services remain accessible. This process ensures a swift, informed response to evolving risks and reinforces overall system resilience during periods of severe weather." Board members heard that this winter plan demonstrates a comprehensive, proactive approach rooted in robust governance, collaborative system working, and continuous learning.
Shropshire health bosses are changing the way repeat prescriptions are ordered in the county. NHS Shropshire, Telford and Wrekin says it wants to phase out the prescription ordering direct service, that's POD, and instead have repeat prescriptions ordered through the NHS app or directly from GP practices. NHS Shropshire, Telford and Wrekin says the POD service is currently used by 70% of local GP practices, but that it duplicates the same facility offered by practices in the NHS app and costs the local healthcare system more than £1 million a year. Under the proposal, the organisation wants to end the service by the end of November 2025. The service said it will offer extra help for people without access to digital services such as the app, but it added that it understands the proposal will be a change for many people and wants county residents to find out more and give their own opinions on the plans. NHS SDW has now launched an engagement exercise which includes a public survey online and in paper copies at GP practices, community pharmacies and voluntary sector partners. The survey takes about 5 minutes to complete and people have until Sunday, November the 9th to respond.
A mobile breast screening unit is moving from a town location to a university campus. The unit, which had previously been located at Cottage Care Centre in Newport, is to move to a new site at Harper Adams University from November until February next year. The mobile screening unit is part of the breast screening service provided by Shropshire Breast Screening at the Shrewsbury and Telford Hospital NHS Trust, or SATH. The mobile screening unit was previously based at Cottage Care Centre, but SATH said construction at the location means the site cannot support the unit's logistical needs on this occasion. Kat Rowlands, lead superintendent and breast screening programme manager, said, "We looked at several options in Newport, but the mobile unit has specific space and access needs. Harper Adams University at Edgemond has helped us meet those, and we're really grateful for their support. I also want to say a heartfelt thank you to Cottage Care Centre, who've supported the breast screening programme for many years. Their help has been invaluable. Women aged 50 to 70 who are registered at Newport's two medical practices, Wellington Road and Linden Hall, will shortly receive an appointment for the new site at Harper Adams, with details and a map of the new location. Those 71 and over who have not had a mammogram in the last 3 years can contact the breast screening team to book an appointment."
An initiative encouraging children to experience new activities, such as riding a bike or visiting the seaside before they turn 10, has returned in Telford. Telford and Meeking Council's 10 by 10 programme is being rolled out in primary schools across the borough this autumn. Hundreds of children up to the age of 10 will receive an adventure card as they are encouraged to have a go at 10 fun and enriching activities. These include joining in competitive sports, playing an instrument, learning to swim, taking part in drama and performing arts, visiting the seaside or countryside, experiencing a museum, gallery or heritage site, taking part in a camper trip or an overnight residential, learning to ride a bike, taking part in a debate, or using a library. Councillor Shirley Reynolds, Cabinet Member for Children, Young People, Education, Employment and Skills at Telford and Meeking Council, said, "By giving children simple, exciting challenges to complete before the age of 10, we're encouraging a love of learning and adventure. The adventure cards give children the opportunity to track their progress themselves as they give each activity a go, which we hope helps them discover new experiences and build confidence."
A major tree planting scheme that has seen more than 25,000 trees planted across Shropshire is set to come to an end this autumn. The Trees Outside Woodlands programme, they explored efficient and cost-effective methods of planting trees in non-woodland areas, has, according to Shropshire Council, delivered tremendous results. It was funded by the government through the Shared Outcomes Fund. The programme was delivered in partnership by the Tree Council, Natural England, the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, and five local authorities, including Shropshire Council. Within 5 years, and across 70 different sites in the county, 25,495 trees have been planted in a diverse range of agroforestry systems, including alley cropping, shelter belts, parkland, orchards, and many more. Councillor David Walker, portfolio holder for Historic and Natural Environment at Shropshire Council, said, "Shropshire Council is delighted to have taken part in the highly successful Trees Outside Woods project. In total, 32,140 trees were also distributed to local residents." Project Officer Nick Rowles said, "One of the biggest surprises was how many landowners and farmers wanted to plant trees on their land."
A dairy event in Telford has been hailed a success. UK Dairy Day once again lived up to its reputation as a leading national dairy event, welcoming over 8,000 visitors to the Telford International Centre for a day of top-tier exhibitions, innovation and livestock competition. The national events are a fantastic display of over 300 display stands across the Telford International Centre. Exhibitors included feed manufacturers, animal health suppliers, vets, milk buyers, dairy and farm equipment suppliers, plus professional service providers and charities from all over the UK. Trade stand awards were presented to Wares of Knutsford for the best small trade stand, UK Seaweed Fertilisers Limited for the best medium stand, Wednesday Group for the best large trade stand, and Carfig Blue Limited was awarded the best external stand. The UK Dairy Day Cattle Show proudly hosted the national shows for the Ayrshire, Brown Swiss, Dairy Shorthorn and Holstein breeds, along with classes for Guernsey and Jersey cattle. The cattle show brought together some of the UK's most exceptional dairy cows, creating some hot competition. Judges travelled from across the UK to cast their eye over the show ring to select the winners throughout the day. The National Holstein Show judge, David Hodgson of Womanby Holsteins in Cumbria, crowned Mag Pandor, exhibited by Blythe Farms and Firm Blondin, as the Holstein Grand Champion, with reserve champion going to Berryholme Chief Rose, exhibited by H. Wright and Son.
Shropshire Festivals has announced the date for Shropshire Business Festival 2026, a one-day networking event that brings together business leaders and emerging talent from across the county. It will take place on March 5th at Telford International Centre. The free one-day event creates an environment where attendees can forge business partnerships in a relaxed atmosphere with Shropshire Festival's signature fun. Attendees include CEOs, business owners, and professionals from across Shropshire's business community. "We've thrown out the rule book on traditional networking," said Beth Heath at Shropshire Festivals. "Too often, business events feel forced or unengaging. We're creating something completely different. An atmosphere where real conversations happen naturally around icebreaker fun and engaging activities, leading to meaningful business relationships that drive results for the year ahead. Last year, we welcomed over 800 attendees, and we believe our 2026 event will be even more popular. Around 60 businesses from across the West Midlands will exhibit at the festival. Secure your free ticket or apply for a stand at www.shropshirebusinessfestival.co.uk.
Shropshire Town has launched its annual Christmas card competition. Each October, Newport Town Council runs the festive competition, which is aimed at primary school age children living or attending a school within the parish. There are three age categories in the competition: nursery, reception, and year one, school years two and three, and years 4, 5, and 6, and a winner will be selected from each category. The entries are judged by independent adjudicators, and the winning cards will become the Mayor's official Christmas card for 2025 and will be displayed in the Town Council window. An overall winner from the three victorious entries will have the honour of turning on the lights at the Newport Christmas light switch-on on Saturday, November the 22nd. The winner from each category will also receive an open family ticket to Nova Pantomime's Treasure Island in February 2026.
Track 3. As the winter draws ever closer, we are back in the realm of darts, football and rugby. Travelling east, we can still find warmth in Sri Lanka and India, where they are hosting the Women's Cricket World Cup. And into the southern hemisphere, we will find the Ashes starting next month. So summer sports still abound somewhere. With a seasonal overview of the current sporting climate, here is Dave Gregory.
Hello everybody. Well, it's one of those winless weeks when it comes to our three senior soccer teams from the matches played last Saturday, the 4th of October. But the general signs are not too bad. In National League North, AFC Telford United suffered a third consecutive league defeat, going down 1-3 at home to third-placed AFC Fylde. Yet it was Telford who scored first, with a cool finish from midfielder Remy Walker in only the 7th minute. Unfortunately, the Bucks were unable to add to their score, as the full-timers from the Lancashire coast began to show their quality and dominate possession. It became a cagey game, with not much Goldmouth action to excite a crowd of over 1,600, except for some Telford counter-attacks. Fylde levelled the scores 12 minutes into the second half. It was 2-1 to Fylde in the 78th minute, with a shot from 25 yards. The visitors showed a hunger for a third goal, and that came just before the end. Fylde deserved their win by gradually wearing down Telford, although the home team acquitted themselves reasonably well against superior opposition, and AFC Telford United are fifth from bottom in the table. Shrewsbury Town's League Two match at eighth from bottom Barrow in Cumbria was affected by Storm Amy, with a gale-force wind and some squalls of heavy rain playing their part. Shrewsbury opted to play with the wind at their back in the first half and with a better side in the match, dealing with the home team when they made the weather on their side in the second half. Although there were no goals in the match, it was Town who came closest to scoring on several occasions, including when the woodwork or the wind got into the way. So no win, but a decent performance from Shrewsbury. Shrewsbury Town are second from bottom after that game. The next games are two home games to Cambridge and to Crawley, so let's hope they pick up some points. In the Premiership, for the second week running, Wolves were denied their first league win of the season by a late goal from the opposition. Within seconds of Wolves having their manager sent off for kicking a ball away in frustration, Wolves opened the scoring against 12th-placed Brighton in the 20th minute, when Marshall Monetzi's fierce shot was tipped against the underside of the bar by Brighton's goalie, and the ball hit the goalkeeper's back and entered the net. Well, they all count, don't they? Wolves pushed for a second goal, but Brighton also posed a threat. In the second half, Wolves continued to look dangerous on the counter-attack and missed one particularly good chance. Sam Johnston in the Wolves' goal made a huge second-half save. Wolves sat back to defend their lead, but were undone following a Brighton short corner routine in the 86th minute. Wolves' further efforts to grab a winner sadly failed, so 1-1 was the final score. Wolves are still bottom on 2 points. And now the Premier League stops for another international break. Now on to local junior soccer. In the Midlands Football League Premier Division, Whichurch Allport were beaten 3-0 at 11th-placed Brockton, and Whichurch are 9th. In Division 1, AFC Bridge North endured a 3-1 win at 14th-placed Saffron Dynamo, and AFC Bridge North are 6th. In the North West Counties League First Division South, Allscott Teith won their home local derby with Hormont 2-1. High-flying Telford Town went down 1-0 at Eccleshill. Market Drayton Town drew 3-3 at home to Stafford Town, and Shawbury United were beaten at home by Barnton 0-3. Now on Saturday the 27th of September, Ludlow Town edged past Ulster Town 3-2 in round 1 of the UHL Challenge Cup. By the way, last week I did promise you that I'd try to locate where those towns Brimscombe and Thrupp came from. You may remember they played Ludlow the previous week. Well, I can tell you that they are both in Gloucestershire. They are near Stroud, which is a nice part of the world. So now you know. A bit more soccer news now. One of Shrewsbury Town's young goalkeepers, 19 years old, Elith Harrison, who was on loan from Manchester United, has earned another call to the England under-20 ranks, despite losing his place between the sticks for Shrewsbury. Now, in women's soccer, Shifnal Town have stormed to the top of the West Midlands Women's League Premier Division. They have had 3 wins from their 3 matches, the latest being a 5-1 triumph over Corndon Court. In the same league, Shrewsbury Town are also unbeaten after a 64th-minute strike saw them to a 1-0 win at Hensford Town. And in West Midlands 1 North, Telford Town slipped to a 1-2 defeat at home to Lichfield City. Now on to other sports. And it may seem a bit odd leading off with a cricketing story in October, but we can report that Shropshire cricketer Mitchell Stanley has been called up for the England Lions squad for their forthcoming tour of Australia. The 24-year-old from Telford is part of an 18-man squad that will head down under in early November, ahead of matches in Perth, Canberra and Brisbane. Lions head coach Andrew Flintoff is enthusiastic about the talent in the squad and the prospect of playing in Australian conditions against quality opposition, so we hope they do well. Mitchell has played for Shifnal, Shropshire in all age groups and the Shropshire First Team, and also played for Worcestershire, Lancashire and Manchester Originals. Other young Salopians in the news are golfer Lauren Crump, who represented England under-16s, rather, alongside five other girls in the annual match against Ireland at Ballybunion Golf Club in the Republic of Ireland last weekend. Perhaps we shall have news of how things went next time. Then there's Conor McNamara of Shropshire's newest boxing club, Reload Boxing Club of Ketley Telford, who became a Midlands title holder in the National Development Championships the previous weekend. The 15-year-old competed at under 63 kilograms, then went through to the last Sunday's pre-quarter final. Again, I hope for more news next time of how that went on. Stunned disbelief was the immediate reaction of 34-year-old Ash Wellings as he joined the elite band of Shropshire bowlers to be crowned British Champion of Champions at Owley Wood in Northwich, Cheshire on Saturday 27th of September. It was his first time in qualifying for the finals from an original 64-strong field. He first started playing the sport at 15 years of age and had watched most of the previous Champion of Champions events, dreaming of the day that he might get the chance to play in it. Well, now, after the Castlefield man's almost flawless performance in the final, his name is now on the coveted trophies, if very well done to him. Other bowl success stories include Castlefield's veterans winning the Reekin Cup to become Shropshire knockout winners in the final against Woore at Bylett in Bridge North, and Rocodyne Wood, who have retained their vice-like grip on the County Women's Cup despite a real challenge from Bowering Ladies in the eight-a-side final at Shifnal. Our two major rugby union sides don't appear to have played on the 27th of September, but we can report that Telford Tigers ice hockey team's head coach, Tom Watkins, celebrated his 800th match in charge on Sunday 28th of September, when his team scored three times in the final 3 minutes to snatch a thrilling 7-5 win at home to Basingstoke Bison in the National League. So on that celebratory milestone, that's all the sports news for this time. So thank you for listening. Bye-bye. Until next time.
Track 4. We round off part 1 with our last visit to the newsroom with Al and Morgan, including some wonderful dog news.
A Shropshire village has been buzzing with activity as more than 120 scarecrows, including one of Ozzy Osbourne, lined the streets for the return of a much-loved festival. The three-day Pattingham Scarecrow Festival, which has previously raised thousands of pounds for local causes, made a return last weekend. Now in its seventh edition, the popular event ran between Friday and Sunday, offering fun for all ages in the village on the Shropshire South Staffordshire border. A total of 123 scarecrows took over the village, displayed across three routes. Organiser Mike Coop said, "We had 123 scarecrows in the festival. They were all presented in the trail guide that was on sale. We had our three loops for people to follow, and visitors could buy a map that told them where they were and who made them. A standout entry this year was a scarecrow version of Donald Trump, spotted sitting on a low wall along the high street. Local farmer Roger Evans also impressed with a striking castle made entirely of hay bales. Organiser Mike has photographed each of the scarecrows and hopes to produce a 2026 calendar showcasing some of the best designs."
A stray dog that was saved from death row has become an expert pet detective by sniffing out lost animals. Rico was 2 days away from being put down before kind-hearted Rachel Rogers paid £150 to rescue him from a Portuguese dog pound. Rachel, who runs a dog training school, took Rico in and was amazed to discover his incredible sniffing skills. Within months, Rico's nose was being used to track down lost pets and animals which had escaped from their enclosures, including a runaway capybara. Rico would be given a blanket or chew toy to smell, which he would then use to locate the area where the animals had been most recently. In some cases, Rico was even given the lost animal's poo to smell in order to pick up a trail. Rico is now used to finding lost animals. Over the years, the 10-year-old Coconi dog has taken part in more than 20 pet rescues. Rachel, 36, from Whitchurch, is preparing to mark 10 years since she gave Rico a second chance of life. She said, "It was December 2015 when I got him. I had just got my first house and was living on my own. I saw this picture online of this really cute black and tan dog in Portugal, and they said he had 2 days left to live. I paid the fee to get him out of the pound, but they hadn't found him a home. I ended up paying and bringing him over. When I got him, he was petrified of men. He would hide behind me and wee. I tried the usual training stuff, but it didn't work, so I tried this man trailing, and he was really good at that. It was like hide and seek where they sniff you out. It's just for fun and enrichment for the dog, it's natural, but Rico has ended up doing it as a job." Rico's first rescue happened while Rachel was doing a course about water voles in Wales. She said, "There was a family in the car park crying because they'd lost their dog and he was missing. My friend suggested Rico try and help them, so we let him sniff the boot of the car to get the lost dog scent. We searched for about 3 hours, and he kept going to the same location with a 7-foot-high fence. The dog came out hours later from the exact spot Rico had identified. Now, we train other dog trainers across the world so that they can teach owners." One of the strangest rescues Rico took part in was when a capybara called Cinnamon escaped from Who Zoo and Dinosaur World in Telford last year. Rachel said, "We got a tortoise request the other week, but the capybara was the weirdest. I had him on the capybara hunt for a few hours, but I made them give him a break as he's getting old. I was in London when Cinnamon went missing, so she had been missing for a few days before we went out. Obviously, makes it harder as not a fresh trail of scent to follow. They didn't have a scent article, what Rico uses to sniff, so he just got given capybara poo from Cinnamon's family members in the zoo. I was worried he would go to the zoo to their enclosure, but he followed a trail quite a while. He went through a field with a horse and kept going to a ditch and found more poo that one of the keepers thought was capybara poo. He was searching for 3 hours in that same area, and the zookeepers put a trap down, and she was caught a day or so later. Rachel hopes her border terrier puppy, Pebbles, will carry on Rico's hard work and keep searching for lost pets when he retires. She said, "I've got Pebbles, who's a 7-month-old border terrier puppy. Hopefully, she can carry on Rico's amazing work."
A town's talented gardeners were recognised at a special ceremony as the winners of the In Bloom Gardening Competition were officially crowned. The presentation evening, hosted by Market Drayton Town Council, took place at the Royal British Legion, where residents gathered to celebrate the town's most beautiful gardens, creative displays and environmentally friendly spaces. The awards were presented by Mayor Tim Manton and Deputy Mayor Phil Glover, who applauded mind-blowing entries and the dedication and passion shown by all entrants. A council spokesman said it was a wonderful evening, a great turnout and a pleasure to host such a lovely event. Winners included Sue Harrison, who took home the award for Best Front Garden. Tam Wedgwood was named winner of the Best Back Garden category, while the award for Best Patio Display went to Mike Freed and Candice Stanley. Ros Smith was the Best Allotment or Vegetable Garden, while the prize for Best Water Garden was awarded to Colin Bates, and the Goosefields Residential Community was named Best Group Dwelling, highlighting the collective effort of residents in maintaining attractive shared spaces. Trish Dawson received the award for Best Environmentally Friendly Garden, and Matthew Porter was awarded Best Hanging Basket Planter or Window Box Award. Mayor Tim Manton praised the high standard of entries and the commitment of the local community to keeping Market Drayton blooming. He said, "It's a delight to present the awards to the successful entrants in the 2025 Market Drayton Town Council In Bloom competition. The standard this year was nothing short of mind-blowing, and it was wonderful to be able to reward the efforts applicants have gone to wow each category."
A charity says it anticipates saving at least a third of its energy usage thanks to a major project to invest in solar panels and heat source pumps. Bosses at Meeting Point House in Telford say the switch to green energy is already paying dividends by being more efficient and cost-effective. The majority of funding for the project came from the Marches Energy Group in the form of a £44,000 grant, with additional funds raised by the players of the People's Postcode Lottery and the Meeting Point Trust itself. Wayne Jensen, CEO of Meeting Point Trust, said there were numerous reasons behind the decision to overhaul the building's heating system. We had 5 boilers which were originally installed when Meeting Point House was built in the 1980s, he said. They had effectively reached the end of their life and couldn't be replaced without incurring some major costs. So we decided to move towards alternative sources of energy and applied for funding with a view to replacing as many of the gas boilers as possible. Thanks to the grant from the Marches Energy Group, we were able to install solar panels on the roof of the building, along with heat source pumps which provide both heating and cooling for the majority of the building. It's always difficult to quantify these things, but we think we can cut our energy costs by about a third, which is a great help in the overall running of Meeting Point House. However, it's important to stress that the sole purpose of this project was not just to save costs, but to also reduce our carbon footprint and promote green energy, which as a community charity we feel passionately about.
A Wellington-based club is celebrating the fact that it is still blooming after 65 years. Reekin Flower Club has been bringing colour, friendship and inspiration to Wellington for over 6 decades. We're still going strong with over 70 members and welcome anyone who loves flowers and loves creativity, said President Linda Hood. The club was founded in the late 1950s by Mrs. Decima Lanyon, a keen gardener and flower arranger, and has since welcomed top floral demonstrations from across the country. Linda added, "We meet on the third Wednesday of every month, except for August, at Belmont Hall in Wellington, and enjoy watching beautiful arrangements created for us by experts. It's quite an achievement for us still be flourishing after all this time, and to have so many members, as many similar clubs have folded. Our members also support good causes, from collecting for Ukraine to gifting Christmas presents to local care homes. The club's next meeting will be on October the 15th at 2 p.m, with the demonstrator being Debbie Wellington. For further details, contact Linda Hood on 01952 252 243.
A new bus service has been launched to attract more visitors to the Severn Valley Railway and make it easier for people to travel to the attraction. The Severn Valley Railway has partnered with Select Bus Services. Passengers using the service to travel to Bridge North from Telford, Shifnal, Shrewsbury and Much Wenlock will be able to receive a 10% discount at cafes and gift shops across the Severn Valley line on production of their bus ticket or pass. The Severn Valley Railway welcomes up to 250,000 visitors per year and is among the UK's most popular and much-loved historical attractions, and it is hoped even more visitors will come to the Heritage Line after the launch of the new bus service. Ben Brown, Select Bus Services Managing Director, said, "We're very excited to be entering into partnership with the Severn Valley Railway to bring more visitors to this very popular heritage railway. We have several routes, 113 to 116 and 436, travelling into Bridge North, the SVR's Northern Terminus Station, and connections on route 297 can be made at Bridge North or Kidderminster. Our single fare cap of £3 is great value and is available through to March 2027.
A new professional repertory company has been launched in Bridge North, with bold productions and fresh opportunities for local artists. Ethelfleed Theatre Company, a new professional rep company created by Theatre on the Steps in collaboration with director Naomi Coleman, has recently launched in the market town. The company will stage 2 productions annually, beginning with Conor McPherson's chilling adaptation of Daphne du Maurier's The Birds in November 2025. Ethelfleed aims to deliver bold, exciting theatre while nurturing opportunities for local artists and theatre makers. Adapted by Conor McPherson from Daphne du Maurier's classic short story, this suspenseful, claustrophobic drama explores survival, trust and the darkness within. Nikki Jenner, artistic director at Theatre on the Step, said, "Naomi is a fantastic director and is working with us to build an exciting new opportunities that celebrate Bridge North as a hub for professional theatre. We'll be opening the door to more actors and creatives behind the scenes, so there'll be plenty of ways to get involved. we'd encourage anyone interested to keep an eye on our social channels. The Bird runs at Theatre on the Steps from November the 13th to the 15th.
Track 5. Last week, Robert Green brought you the first part of an article on our local hero, Captain Webb, through his interview with curator Kate Cadman. My brother-in-law has also swum the channel, but his artifacts are on display in that most illustrious of home museums, the downstairs loo. Here is part 2, talking about Webb's early days in the county and his first swimming adventures along the River Severn.
Why did Matthew Webb become this enormous celebrity and swim the channel? His life story is quite an interesting one. He was born in Dorley, and that's very much an association because, of course, there is actually a memorial to him in Dorley today. His family lived in Dorley only for a short period when he was more as a baby, moved to Madeley and then finally to Coalbrookdale. So he grew up only a few hundred yards from the River Severn. His father and his grandfather were both doctors, very well respected locally. So the family were reasonably well off. But Matthew had a very adventurous nature, apparently. He read adventure stories about pirates and all these exciting things. And he didn't want to stay in Shropshire. He wanted to see the world. And he actually asked to become an apprentice with the Merchant Navy, which was at that point the age of 12, astonishingly enough. So he moved up to Liverpool to the training ship there. And the sort of records from his contemporaries say that he was a very, very good swimmer even then. We know that because we know that he and his brothers used to swim in the River Severn, and he actually saved his younger brother from drowning when he was 11. So obviously a strong swimmer. And they commented, the other boys on the HMS Conway, where they were training, that he was an incredibly good long-distance swimmer. But he wasn't very fast. He was quite slow. And so they didn't really think anything of it. But what they didn't realise was how good his endurance swimming was. This became clear later on. He took all his exams and he became a mate and then eventually a master, which is why he's Captain Webb. And at one point in his career, he was on a ship crossing the Atlantic and one of the sailors went overboard and he jumped into the Atlantic and swam round the ship for half an hour to try and save this person. Sadly, he didn't succeed. The passengers on the ship were so impressed with this incredibly brave feat that they clubbed together and gave him a collection of money. And later on, he was awarded the Stanhope Medal for bravery. So quite a track record on this sort of swimming. So he'd been a captain. He'd been sailing literally all over the world. There'd been various attempts on the Channel swim. And a gentleman from America swam it wearing a sort of patent suit, like an inflatable suit, not long before he actually did his swim. And possibly that's what inspired him, because he thought, right, if he can do it, you know, with that assistance, I can do it straightforward as I am. He trained quite a lot. He found one or two people who would support him. And he did it, you know, in an organised way. He had a support boat. He, you know, planned it quite carefully. And the medical profession at the time said it wasn't possible, that the human body could not do that. One thing that comes out, that he was a very determined man, I think of that Shropshire trait, you know, sort of slightly obstinate and, you know, no, I will do it. I don't care what you say. And so he went ahead with his plans. He had one failed attempt earlier in August 1875. And the failure was not actually him. It was, the weather was quite poor and it was quite wet and cold. And the people in his support boat actually wanted to stop. He was okay, which must have been very frustrating. Anyway, August the 24th, 1875, he got into the sea at Dover and came out on the French shore on the 25th, as I said, nearly 22 hours later.
I wonder what sort of reception party he had in France.
Huge, apparently. There are lots of engravings. The great thing is that this is a period when printing has become much cheaper. There are an awful lot of publications. So there's newspapers, there's illustrated magazines. Many of them are engravings still at this point, of course, rather than photographs. But it does mean that his fame spreads very, very quickly. and his image becomes well known. In fact, I'm sure many of us might remember that Bryant and May used to do Captain Webb matches.
Yes, I remember those, although I don't smoke. I remember the matches.
I think people do, because it's a wonderfully heroic image. And I think that's the other thing. He did this wonderful feat at a time, possibly when in Britain we were feeling a little, shall we say, like America and Germany were really developing and they were competing with us. And we felt a little bit, you know, under competition. And when you can produce a hero like this, there's nothing much wrong, is there really? And he became that epitome, that symbol of the British hero. Strong, brave, lots of endurance. Absolutely, you know, perfect example.
And no doubt he got an even greater welcome back in this country.
He did indeed. He got a good welcome back in Dover and London. But when he took the train up here back to Shropshire, came to Wellington, and apparently there was people lining the streets. And they did a big parade for him in Dorley, his birthplace.
I'd like to have been there to see that.
It must have been wonderful. And in fact, it's commemorated in various postcards. There's a local jokey postcard image that comes up, which is the pig on the wall. In Dorley, they put the pig on the wall to watch the band go by. Well, they incorporated that with to watch Captain Webb's procession go by. So there's quite a few pictures of that.
Track 6. We take a trip with our WSTN colleague Bill Kernow next on a visit to a vineyard on the road from Bishop's Castle to Monmouth. I confess I don't share Bill's love of a chatty taxi driver. I am reminded of the brilliant Victoria Wood sketch about checking in for a flight, where she is asked, "Would you like a talking or non-talking seat?" However, I would put up with it to take the trip that Bill does here, to the Kerryvale Vineyard in Pentrehaling, Montgomery. And home again, of course, in a haze of locally grown wine.
Keith, our taxi driver, was very chatty. I prefer that. In fact, I prefer to sit in the front passenger seat, making it easier to have a conversation. There's nothing worse than sitting in stony silence next to an uncommunicative taxi driver for mile after mile, when even the usual, "Are you busy?" or "What time do you finish?" or "Terrible weather we're having," is simply met with a monosyllabic answer, or even worse, a grunt. Keith's claim to fame was that he had not worn long trousers for over 30 years. He'd even turned down invites to weddings, funerals, etc., if his wife told him he had to wear long trousers. So there he was, on a chilly autumn morning, under leaden skies with a constant drizzle of rain, true to his sartorial convictions, in his shorts, taking us the few miles from our hotel in Montgomery to Kerryvale Vineyard for a tour and a cheese and wine tasting experience bought for me by our son as a birthday present. He knows how to protect his inheritance. These tours had taken place throughout this summer, in glorious weather, and never once had it rained, until today. We'd actually done this tour once before, but many years ago, and I can't remember much about it. I actually wonder if that's a sign of a successful wine-tasting tour. Anyway, my wife quite rightly insisted we should not drive afterwards, hence the taxi. Our tour was guided by Kerryvale's owner, Russell Cook, an extremely knowledgeable viniculturist who bought the vineyard in 2020 from the Ferguson family, who had founded it 10 years earlier. The 6-acre site had been home to an old blacksmith's house and turned out to be the ideal growing conditions for vines. It is now home to some 6,500 vines, planted in rows running north to south to maximize the use of the sun, and they need constant tending, meaning regular walks of 8 miles up and down the rows. There is considerable science to the making of wine, which Russell explained to us, and I would tell you if I could remember it all, which I can't. Suffice to say that climate plays a vital role. Vines need the sun, even more so than rain. Vines are deep-rooted and can find moisture even in very dry conditions. But it is the sun that provides shivers for the grapes, which in turn determines the quality and quantity of the wine, which will inevitably vary from year to year. bed and one of the vines is frost. So considerable efforts are made to try to protect the vines from frost, with varying success. Kerry Vale grows four varieties of grapes, Solaris, Phoenix, Blondo, and Pinot Noir, making four white wines, two rosy wines, three red wines, and three sparkling wines. Viniculture is one of the fastest growing parts of our agricultural landscape, with well over 1,000 vineyards in the UK. The reason is clearly climate change. Indeed, Russell says that the conditions for making, for example, sparkling wine, are rapidly becoming better than the Champagne region in France, and English sparkling wines are winning international recognition. When developing the site as a vineyard, archaeologists discovered evidence of a very extensive Roman settlement on the site. It was once part of the ancient Roman site of Penter Haling Fort, a civilian settlement on the edge of a number of Roman marching camps. There is evidence of even earlier Bronze Age funerary monuments, a Druid's Road, and a medieval settlement with Offa's Dyke just a field away. Thinking of the Roxter Vineyard, close to the remains of the Roman city of Uriconium, I wondered if there was any reason why vineyards might be located close to Roman settlements. Russell thought not, but did say that Romans probably introduced the vine to Britain. It was still overcast and drizzling when Keith came back to take us to our hotel in his shorts and taxi. Still chatting, but a surfeit of wine was making me feel drowsy, and I probably gave monosyllabic replies and grunts. Working abroad for many years in different countries, I've been very fortunate in seeing many wonderful sights. But driving home the next day, through quiet border country lanes in glorious autumnal sunshine, the views compared favorably with any. It was a perfect end to a lovely birthday gift.
Track 7. Time for the third and final part of the Captain Webb story. It is perhaps a greater testament that we remember him more for his triumphant swim than for his sad demise in a swim too far at Niagara. And indeed he was celebrated by the great poet Sir John Betjeman with the 1940 poem A Shropshire Lad, where he is depicted as a ghostly returnee. The gas was on in the Institute. The flare was up in the gym. A man was running a mineral line. A lass was singing a hymn. When Captain Webb, the Dorley man, Captain Webb from Dorley, came swimming along the old canal that carried the bricks to Lawley. Swimming along, swimming along, swimming along from Severn, and paying a call at Dorley Bank while swimming along to heaven. The sun shone low on the railway line and over the bricks and stacks, and in at the upstairs windows of the Dorley houses' backs, when we saw the ghost of Captain Webb, Webb in a water sheeting, come dripping along in a bathing dress to the Saturday evening meeting. Dripping along, to the congregational hall. Dripping and still he rose over the sill and faded away in a wall. There wasn't a man in Oakengates that hadn't got hold of the tale, and over the valley in Ironbridge and round by Colebrook Dale. How Captain Webb, the Dorley man, Captain Webb from Dorley, rose rigid and dead from the old canal that carries the bricks to Lawley. Rigid and dead to the Saturday congregation, paying a call at Dorley Bank on the way to his destination. Sir John was certainly kinder about Captain Webb than he was about my place of birth in his poem Come Friendly Bombs and Fall on Slough. Enjoy this final part of the story of our local hero.
We've moved over to one of the display cabinets, and inside are some actual boxes of matches by Bryant and May, with the face of Captain Webb on them. You were talking about these earlier.
Yes, the image of Captain Webb on matchboxes starts very, very quickly. The first sort of patent for that image on a matchbox is actually in the February of 1876. So, you know, within 6 months, they were producing these. Originally, it was a smaller company, but they were taken over by Bryant and May, and Bryant and May carried on doing Captain Webb matches well into the 1970s.
And then another exhibit here, which is a wooden paddle. Is this the original that he used?
apparently he built himself a little boat while he was doing his training in the Channel. He built himself his own little boat to use for sort of general transportation, and this is the paddle that he used.
Still looks good condition.
It's surprising, really, isn't it? The end of it does look like it's been used quite a bit, but he obviously was quite a good craftsman, I think.
And in the middle of this stand, there is a plaque depicting Captain Matthew Webb in plaster. Whereabouts is that normally kept?
Right. So the plaster plaque is actually in our archive, but it was the model for two or three memorial plaques, including the one in the Holy Trinity Church in Coalbrookdale. And there's an interesting story there, because the memorial plaque, which I think is bronze, is actually in the porch, not in the main church. There was a lot of concern when he died in the Niagara Falls Rapids, that people believed it was impossible, and therefore there was the question, was this actually suicide? And if there was any question about that, Church of England then would not allow people to be buried in the churchyard, and they would not allow memorials inside the church. But he was such a local hero that a compromise was made, so his memorial is inside the porch, not quite in the church. And it's also the same image that's on the memorial to him in Dorley. And of course, that was set up in 1909, mainly due to his brother. And there is a quote on it that many people know, which is, "Nothing great is easy." Which is a good thing to live by, really, isn't it?
That's what a true saying.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Kate, for telling us about this truly wonderful celebration, all about the legend who is Captain Matthew Webb.
Track 8. I spent some time volunteering for the Restorative Justice Project a couple of years ago and saw the difference that interventions can make, offering opportunities and support to disadvantaged young people, where there perhaps hasn't been much of that before. Chris Pitchford reads this article from Shropshire Magazine on the youth initiatives being championed by the High Sheriff of Shropshire.
Young people from across the county are joining forces to raise awareness and vital funds as part of a youth-led project championed by the High Sheriff of Shropshire. Jane Trowbridge is launching Youth Awareness Day, a new initiative aimed at empowering young people across the county to shine a spotlight on the issues facing them and to raise funds for youth-focused causes. Jane explains that this is a powerful new campaign actively involving young people of all ages at every level. From the initial creation of the project, including the logo design and choosing the name, to raising funds, choosing the recipients, and finally giving out the checks. It enables young people to recognise and own the problems that they are facing, and gives them a voice, as well as control, empowering them to make a difference. At the heart of the campaign is the Blue for Youth Awareness Day on the 16th of October this year. This is where schools and organisations countywide are being asked to wear something blue to show support for youth and to donate whatever they can to local youth charities via the Shropshire Community Foundation Youth Awareness Fund. Schools, clubs and organisations are also asked to take part in the Enterprise Challenge, a longer-term fundraising venture which involves students running their own mini-fundraising projects, such as for selling homemade goods, taking part in challenges, and holding events. Jane is hoping to visit as many schools as possible during her year to encourage and support them. All funds raised will be distributed by a panel of young people from across the Shropshire and Telford and Wrekin areas. Youth ambassadors from schools and colleges across the county, working with Shropshire Community Foundation, will allocate the funds to the charities and projects which they consider will make the biggest difference in the county. Jane says that this is an important part of the initiative and is not just for young people, but also by young people. It gives them control and empowers them to make an impact. Explaining why she believes that a Youth Awareness Day is needed, Jane says, "The statistics speak for themselves. Here are a few hard facts. Currently, approximately 1 in 6 young people have mental health issues. 1 in 8 children are classified as NEET, and that's written as a collapsed acronym in the form of NEET, standing for Not In Full-Time Education, Employment or Training. Approximately 1 in 5 young people have a drug habit, with drug-related deaths increasing in recent years. Exploitation is increasing in Shropshire by an alarming percentage, and according to the Children's Commissioner, 1 in 5 children experience abuse before they reach 18 years of age. Obviously, these figures are constantly changing, but they highlight the numerous significant problems facing our young people, which I have seen firsthand during my 15 years as a magistrate in Telford. During that time, I saw numerous young people whom the system had failed, caught in cycles of neglect, abuse, addiction, and long-term and even generational unemployment. A social worker once told me that as soon as they, meaning young people, get into the criminal justice system, they are lost. This made me realise the importance of early youth support intervention to support and protect the vulnerable youth so that they can lead positive and fulfilled lives. Investment in our young people is an investment in all of our futures. There are many amazing local charities which provide excellent support for the young, but funds are tight. Too many charities are chasing too few grants. Government and local authority funding has been cut, and many of these youth-focused organisations are struggling to survive. Put bluntly, they need money. Youth Awareness Day will help raise much-needed funds for these charities, but the real power of the project is that it also gives the young a platform to raise awareness of the challenges facing them. It helps to equip them with knowledge and skills to be able to navigate their environments safely and responsibly. It also empowers them to make informed choices, seek out help when needed, and engage in meaningful discussion about the issues which affect their lives. It creates a sense of community and belonging, and that strengthens society as a whole. Among the schools and colleges who have already thrown their support behind the Youth Awareness Day is Telford College. Caroline Bastow, Vice Principal with responsibility for support and performance, said, "Telford College is pleased to be supporting such a worthwhile initiative. Youth Awareness Day is a powerful reminder of what young people can achieve if given the lead, raising vital awareness and funds for those who need it most. It's inspiring to see youth at the heart of change, championing a brighter future for their peers." Daytreen, who is an A-level creative media student at Telford College, added, "I believe this will be good for the local community to come together for the common goal of supporting some of our most disadvantaged young people. What is important to me is that not only is this supporting local young people, but we are also collectively leading the initiative." Adrienne Usherwood-Brown, who is strategic lead for the March's Career Hub, said that they were proud to support Youth Awareness Day. "This initiative is a fantastic way to bring schools, colleges and communities together to champion young people, whether it's through wearing blue and donating on the day or engaging in longer-term enterprise projects. Students gain valuable life and career skills. The opportunity for schools and colleges to request a visit from the High Sheriff of Shropshire adds a special sense of recognition and celebration. It's inspiring to see young people take the lead in making a difference." Lakeland's Academy is also getting behind the project, with head teacher Mark Hignett adding, "Lakeland's Academy is delighted to be supporting Shropshire Youth Awareness Day 2025. And to support the excellent work of our High Sheriff Jane Trowbridge. This is a fantastic initiative to give our young people a voice on matters that are so pertinent to them, and also to give them ownership of a solutions-focused approach to some of the challenges they are facing." Leo Winkley, head teacher of Shrewsbury School, also praised the project, saying, "Shrewsbury School is proud to support the High Sheriff's Youth Awareness Day. The initiative empowers the young to raise funds for youth-related charities in Shropshire, We look forward to working with schools and colleges across the county in this shared effort. Mark Cooper, head teacher at Thomas Adams School in Wem, added, "After meeting with Jane Trowbridge to discuss her plans, I was particularly impressed with Jane's drive to make a difference for the young people of Shropshire by enabling them to develop themselves so that they can support each other. Jane showed a real passion to develop her understanding of the complex challenges that young people are currently facing and how we could work together to raise the profile of support systems that are so valuable to these young people. Thomas Adams School fully supports her Youth Awareness Day initiative of empowering young people to join together to raise much-needed funds to support local youth charities." Dr. Jane Tinker, head teacher of the Corbett School in Basschurch, said, "I'm very happy to support this and get involved. It shouldn't be needed, but sadly it is. I know that many of the services that previous pupils had access to are no longer available, and we, as schools, are picking a lot of that up." Stephanie Bell Stimson, a member of the Shropshire Youth Parliament and a student at Sir John Talbot School in Whitchurch, was full of praise for the project, stating, "I believe that the most important thing for young people today is opportunity. The opportunity to grow, to be heard, to feel supported, and to make a difference. Far too often, young people are seen as passive members of society, waiting for adulthood, before they can participate in shaping the world around them. But the truth is, we are the future, and we deserve a seat at the table now. That's why I'm passionate about youth clubs, properly funded schools, and mental health support that isn't just a poster on the wall. In rural areas like Shropshire, young people can feel isolated and left behind, and what we need is someone to believe in us, or better yet, the chance to believe in ourselves. Thanks to the High Sheriff's efforts, this is becoming a reality," adds Stephanie. Phoebe Rogers from the Lake and Child School in Clebury Mortimer is equally enthusiastic and said, "Whilst wearing blue on Youth Awareness Day will reflect a unified recognition of supporting our youth, the greatest benefit is rooted in raising awareness within the community of young people. The Awareness Day is creating conversation between our young people, who are talking about and responding to the issues that our county's youth face, and the issues that they themselves may face. It is clear the issues of Shropshire's young people have been recognised, and as a county, we are most fortunate to have Jane Trowbridge spearheading such a powerful campaign. I feel really hopeful that the dedication of Shropshire's people will create a positive impact that benefits our young people now and is sustainable for those of the future." Among the organisations also showing their support for the campaign is the Bright Star Boxing Academy in Shifnal. Partnerships manager for them, Tara Lewis, said, "As a community organisation dedicated to supporting young people, Bright Star is proud to stand behind Youth Awareness Day. This initiative is more than just a date on the calendar. It's a vital opportunity to come together, raise much-needed funds for local youth charities, and start meaningful conversations about the challenges which our young people face today, whether it's mental health, exclusion from education, or a lack of access to safe spaces. These are issues that require urgent attention. At Bright Star, we believe in empowering young people to realise their potential, and Youth Awareness Day is a powerful reminder of why this mission matters, now more than ever." Jane is delighted that a substantial number of schools are already supporting the project, and the wider community, including local businesses and organisations such as the police, the fire service, the RAF, the West Mercia Search and Rescue Service, and other NHS staff, are also showing their support. Jane concludes by asking all to please support our young and make a difference. She adds, "Wouldn't it be wonderful if Shropshire and Telford and Wrekin went blue for the day on the 16th of October? Investing in youth awareness is not just an investment in our young. It is an investment in a healthier, more informed and more resilient future."
Track 9. The kitchen in any home can be a hazardous place, so these tips from TNF Soundings on how to navigate the cooking space as a visually impaired person reminds us all to be mindful and consider how our environments can be accessible for others.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, this is Vivian with some helpful tips for overcoming kitchen challenges for visually impaired listeners. Soundings contributor Fiona wrote this article after visiting the Oban Blind Vision Group, which supports visually impaired people in and around the Argyll coastal town of Oban. But of course, the tips are relevant for anyone who is sight impaired. So, how do you cope in the kitchen when you have sight problems? Our discussion turned up a variety of approaches, from learning home economics as a child at school for the blind, to helping hands from family and friends, to discovering the benefits of new technology. The discussion also produced a very practical suggestion for making some gadgets easier to use for people with visual impairments. First, let's meet the members of the Oban group. There's Morven and her golden retriever guide dog Pilot, Lillian, Alan, Mary with her flat coat retriever guide dog Twiggy, and Alex, a sensory impairment support worker with Argyll and Bute Council. We began chatting about the early days and everyone had different experiences. Talking about preparing vegetables, Morven said when peeling potatoes, she learned to gauge her progress by feeling the skin as she moved around the potato. Alex explained the kitchen could be a dangerous place in the old days, leaning over the gas cooker to light the burners, for example, without being able to see them. Mary attended a school for blind children and recalled her dislike of home economics. All that sewing, she said, everything from a milk jug cover with beads around the edge to a skirt. I loved scissors, not advisable for a blind child, and I naughtily cut a big hole in the middle of the milk jug cover just for the enjoyment. The teacher wasn't amused. Morven recalled weighing scales using individual metal weights, which was possible by judging the size of them. You had to weigh them in your hand to guess which one you were holding. We have talking scales now, which makes it easier, she said, although unfortunately there is no volume control. Lillian, who has sight in one eye only, described using a magnifying glass with a light to be able to read the settings on kitchen gadgets. Alan, who lost his sight at the age of 30, said he relied on his parents to help at first. His mum stuck little adhesive dots onto the most often used buttons on his cooker and washing machine. But coming up to date, what gadgets are helping the group members now? Alan has a talking microwave with tactile buttons with audio and a soup maker with ridges on the inside surface representing the quantity of liquid. Mary has replaced her gas cooker for one with simple low, medium and high settings. Everyone agreed the one cup water dispenser is, well, indispensable. Mary, who learned Braille at school, explained how much easier it would be for people with visual impairment if large appliances such as washing machines and tumble dryers came with Braille user instructions. She described how helpful it would be if all major appliances came with a transparent Braille sticker, which, if required, could simply be stuck over the visual instructions on the machine. Now, there's an idea. The group agreed that would possibly require governmental legislation to encourage manufacturers to comply, but by doing so, it would make life a lot easier for customers with visual impairment. And finally, quick mention about Mary's success at the Paralympics in Toronto, Canada in 1976. She won silver in the discus competition and bronze in the shot put. People used to say the safest place to stand was right in front of me, she laughed. What a lovely group.
DNF Soundings.
Track 10. We have reached the end of this instalment of the East Shropshire Talking Newspaper. Thank you to our readers, Al McLean and Morgan Spice, Dave Gregory, Robert Green and Chris Pitchard from the ESTN, and Bill Kernow from the WSTN, and John Wardle, our sound engineer. You can contact us by telephone on 01952 373 007 and by email on eastshropshiretn@gmail.com. We would love to hear your feedback on this and all editions. Lighting up time is 7:09 p.m. This is the end of this edition of ESTN. Thank you for listening and goodbye.